Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Milk and Sea Audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Halloween 2011.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. Okay, hooligans, this is Kyra, Bill Hogwag's granddaughter of OTR Swag Doom is back. Anyway, for tonight, week one, we have Dark Fantasy queued up. Dark Fantasy was a short series with tales of the weird adventures of Supernatural created for you by Scott Bishop. The series aired as a horror drama on NBC between 1941 and 1942. The show covered horror, science fiction, and murder mysteries. Although a short series, the shows are excellent with some stories way ahead of their time. So let's listen and all get creeped out. Mwahahaha!
Sorry, Mr. Hedges. This is all we can dig up on that story about the missing Hollywood people.
Well, we can't wait any longer. We got to go to press. Let's see what you got. Story from the film Capital. More than a week ago, November 20th to be exact, Philip Hayward, young cinema star of yesterday's Bread and the popular actress Judith Johnston, set sail for New Zealand aboard Hayward's private yacht. As chaperone, Miss Johnson's movie director father accompanied the pair, and it's reported that Johnson Sr. is taking advantage of the sea voyage to complete his original cinema yarn, a story of the strange creatures who live beneath the surface of the sea. That was more than a week ago. Word's been received from New Zealand that the Hayward yacht's more than 2 days overdue. A careful check gives evidence that there have been no disturbances on the Pacific throughout the time the party's been aboard. Special searching parties failed to discover the whereabouts of the boat. Question in Hollywood tonight, the question everywhere, is what's happened to the trio aboard the Dolphin? Where are they? Have they become victims of the fantastic creatures created in the imagination of the author-director aboard the yacht? That is this week's unsolved mystery. Will it ever be? Oh, that's all right. Boy,
right.
Get this down to makeup. Let's get rolling.
Right away.
Hayward, stop that fool noise, will you?
Oh, take it easy, Johnson. No reason to start shouting at each other, you know.
Now, look here. We've been becalmed for 2 days and a night now. We haven't moved a knot one way or the other.
Well, I assure you there's nothing wrong with the motors. I've been over them myself. For some fantastic reason, they just refuse to start again.
Why? Why won't they start?
I don't know. Why did they stop in the first place?
Oh, it's weird. It's like some strange spirit as you send it upon the boat.
Oh, nonsense.
Is it nonsense? There are many terrifying legends about sea spirits, fantastic adventures that have happened to sailors at sea.
Oh, just a lot of myths.
Who knows what strange creatures lurk beneath the sea's surface? Who can tell what might come up out of the depths at any moment?
Oh, stop it. You're talking like a superstitious old fool. You've made too many goofy movies. Just because you won an Academy Award is no sign I'm going to swallow the tripe you dish out in those 8 real clambakes of yours.
No.
Judy.
You can't.
Hey, what's the matter with me?
You cannot. No. I won't let you.
Daughter. Daughter, here. Wake up.
No. You can't do it. No. No, I say. No. No.
Judy. Oh. Judy, darling. What in the name of heaven?
Judy. Oh. Are you all right?
Oh. I was asleep. Dreaming. Oh, it was horrible.
I'd say it was a nightmare.
I dreamed I was talking to a young girl. Yet, she didn't seem like a girl at all. She looked more like a mermaid.
A what?
She was like a nymph from the sea. I thought she stood looking at me. She told me she'd been dead for centuries. And yet, not really dead. I couldn't understand what she meant. She said something about her body being dead, but her mind being free to wander about the world.
Fantastic.
Oh, Dad, it was ghastly. She kept trying to convince me that I should let her mind enter my body.
Well, what did she say she wanted to do?
She said the entire civilization of the Earth depended upon the task she had to perform. Oh, Phil, she seemed to be actually trying to force me out of my body so she could enter it.
Judy, what did this creature look like?
Oh, she was awful looking, Dad. She had long hair. Green and slimy like seaweed. Her teeth were brilliant red. They were long and pointed. She kept staring at me with her little beady eyes. They were horrible, for there were no eyelids. She never blinked once. She just stared and stared.
Yes? What else, Judy?
Well, it was horrible when she touched me. She had long, narrow fingers with no nails on them, and they were covered with fish-like scales.
That's positively the most amazing thing I've ever heard of.
Mr. Hayward!
Oh, yes, Ned, what is it?
Oh, I say, look at the lad. Why, what's wrong, boy? You're pale as a ghost.
Mr. Hayward. The dolphin. She's moving.
The boat's moving. Good. The men got the motor started.
No, sir. That's just it. The motors aren't running. And there's no wind. But the boat's making about 20 knots an hour.
Oh. Why, this boat couldn't possibly move without motors.
That's not all. There's a man at the helm steering the boat. And he's a man none of us have ever seen before.
Man. Are you sure?
Sure as I'm standing here, sir. And he's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
Well, let's go have a look at him.
Hey, come on. You'd best stay here.
Oh, no. No, I'm not going to stay here by myself.
All right, come along, all of you. Follow me.
There at the helm, singing.
Some sort of an ancient sea chanty.
Easy now. Maybe trouble.
There he is, sir. You see, Mr. Hayward?
Oh.
Yeah.
I say, Hayward, that's no man. It's some sort of a sea monster.
Look at his hands, Mr. Hayward.
The lad's right. Long, narrow fingers with webs between them. And no fingernails.
Dad, Phil, they're like the hands of the girl in the dream. Oh, where's he taking us?
Yes. I wonder.
Behind us, sir.
Oh, good Lord. A huge wall of water rising out of the sea.
Get down those steps, everybody. Get down, everybody. Down
the steps. Here into the cabin corner. Hang on. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Hurry.
Everybody all right?
Yes, I am.
Did Judy get down in the cabin?
Yes, she made it. Just managed to close the door before the wave hit.
Are you all right?
Yes, okay. You, Judy?
What in the world caused that?
Yeah, what? No wind. And a wave of water. Hundreds of feet high.
It's a miracle we didn't capsize.
Look, sir. To the port side.
Yes, Ned?
It's land. Land, by heaven.
It can't be. Not in these waters. There's no land for 500 miles.
And what's that over yonder? Mirage?
No, sir. That's no mirage. It's land.
It certainly is. Long, low coast. Extending north and south as far as you can see.
A low, steaming land. Look. Look at the heavy vapors rising from it.
You're right, Judy. It is steaming. That must explain the sultriness that's been round us these past 2 days.
Why, I've been in these waters a dozen times. This has never been here before. It's an entire continent, where there ought not to be anything but empty sea.
Land from the sea. That explains the wave that swept over us. A wave that high could only have been caused by an undersea disturbance.
Oh, nonsense, Johnston. You're trying to say an underwater convulsion forced this vast expanse of land up to the surface.
Precisely. A land called Iban.
Now, I'll have to have a better explanation than that. Things like entire continents rising up out of the ocean just don't happen.
Well, then, if Dad's not correct, what is the explanation?
There is no other. A land called Iban did exist at one time, nearly 10,000 years ago. Ruled by a man named Bul and a woman named Lana. They both possessed wonderful powers and knowledge. Bul, the emperor, destroyed the continent of Iban.
How?
By releasing vast unknown forces beneath the continent. Forces that only he and Lana knew how to control.
But why did he destroy it?
I don't seem to recall. I read the legend once, doing research for one of my pictures. It seems that for some reason or other, Bul and the girl were to release their spirits from their bodies. And those spirits were to have the power someday of recalling the sunken land from the sea.
Then if such a story is true, that must be the land of Iban we're approaching.
Not at all impossible. And if it is true, couldn't that monstrous chanting thing at the helm be Bul himself?
Oh, Dad.
Taking us with him back to his long-lost kingdom.
You don't actually believe that, do you, Johnston?
Why not?
Well, I certainly don't.
Well, Phil, what else can we believe?
That wave couldn't have swept us off our course enough to put us in sight of this land. Besides, look at it. Steaming. And that sultry, foul odor. Land covered with seaweed.
There's no one at the helm, sir. That monster's disappeared.
Oh, but look. There's someone lying on the deck beneath the wheel.
It's a man.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe that thing's met with a bit of hard luck. Now, careful. Careful, Hayward.
Right.
He's breathing. Only slightly.
I say, who is he? Not a member of the crew.
Hard to get on board. Why is he lying here on deck?
What happened to him?
Oh, he's conscious. He's trying to tell us something. Look here. Who are you?
I... Stowaway. Hid in supply room. Went to sleep. I don't remember anything.
Stowaway, he says. Hid in the supply room and went to sleep. Wait a minute. He's dead. Hayward, I'm going to have a look over here.
Oh, Judy, Judy.
Oh, Phil, I feel so strange.
Oh, dear, you look ill.
So very strange.
You'd better go below to the cabin, dear.
Yes, I'd better. I'll lie down for a while.
Shall I go with you, dear?
No. No, I'll be all right if I rest a little while.
All right, dear. Be careful going to your cabin. Yes. Oh, Ned, get a tarpaulin and cover the body.
Right away, sir. Hayward. Come over here a minute, will you?
Yes, Johnson. What is it?
Here. Have a look. See? Someone's climbed down that rope ladder and gone ashore through the mud and slime.
Whoever it was, he didn't sink in very deep.
Seaweed's too thick. Kept him from sinking. I wonder who it was.
I'm in favor of finding out. Oh, Ned.
Yes, sir?
We're going ashore. Watch out for Miss Blake, will you?
Right, sir.
And not a word of this to the rest of the crew, understand?
Yes, sir.
All right, Johnston. Down you go. Yeah. We'll follow those footprints and see where they lead us.
It's the most evil-smelling place I was ever in. Hold on. Look.
Yeah. I see what you mean. A city up ahead there.
A city from the depths of the sea.
I see, Johnston. Isn't that Captain Webb going into that low-domed building over there?
Eh? Oh, yes. Yes, it is. So that's our man.
Ahoy, Captain! Captain Webb! Wait a minute, Captain. Hold up a bit.
Hayward. He's turned around. That snarl on his face. He's got a gun in his hand. Hayward. It isn't Webb. It's that thing.
What in the name of heaven is...
Stand back, the two of you. Stand back.
What? You're not Captain Webb.
I am Bool, Emperor of Eban. And I've returned to claim again my ancient kingdom. If you come one step nearer, I shall be compelled to slay you.
You dare not, Bool.
Donna!
Judy!
You seem surprised, Bool. Did you think I would forget?
Lana!
Judy, darling, what does this mean? Why do you speak so strangely? And why does this thing call you Lana?
I am Lana, Philip Hayward. I have borrowed for a while the body of your beloved Judy.
What?
My mind, my spirit has entered her body. You see me as Judith Johnston, but now I am Lana, Empress of the Kingdom of Eban.
I have returned to rule Eban.
And I have returned to prevent...
You cannot prevent it, Lana.
Look here, this quarrel is none of my affair. I demand that you release whatever power you have over my fiancée.
I have borrowed her body only for a little while, Philip Hayward. Just as Bool has borrowed the body of the captain of your craft.
Yeah. The body I first borrowed was a weak one. A sick stowaway. The captain's is a sturdy body. Now it is mine.
But you must return it to him, Bool. It is the law. You must return his body unharmed. Just as I must return the body of Judith Johnston.
It shall be so. I am about to enter the temple now to regain my Ebonite body.
You cannot open the burial chamber unless I accompany you.
I realize that full well. I enter the temple now. I shall await you, Lana, beside the sepulcher.
Look here, Lana. Oh, whoever you are, this is some horrible nightmare.
Philip Hayward, we must act quickly. I will try to explain. When Bool destroyed Eban 10,000 years ago, we sealed our Ebanite bodies in a vacuum chamber inside this temple. And our spirits left our bodies to roam the universe until Eban should be restored. Now Bool intends to re-enter his body and build a new Eban. Once he does reclaim his ancient body, all is lost. For no one save me can destroy him. And if I slay him, I too must die.
But what can you do?
I have a plan. Come with me into the temple where Bool awaits. Our ancient bodies, just as we left them so long ago.
All is ready, Lana. We will break the vacuum, permit our spirits to enter our sleeping bodies. Are you prepared?
I am prepared, Bool.
Then we begin.
Howard, look. Those bodies in the glass vacuum. They're beginning to move.
Yes. Slowly. Slowly. Look at them. Heaven, she's left you. You're yourself again.
Look. They've left the vacuum. See? Up there.
Oh, there she is. She's the one in my dream.
You are free. All of you.
Not so. The three of you will remain here forever to help rebuild the populace of Eban.
You cannot fool.
Fool is all great, all powerful. Bool is the law. No one can defy.
No one, Bool. Save me.
You lack the courage, Lana.
Not now. I have the courage now. You are cruel and wicked, Bool. Your rule in ancient Eban ended in horrible tragedy. It must not happen again.
Put down the weapon, Lana. You dare not slay me. You'll die yourself.
Then I call upon death to claim me.
You dare not, Lana. You dare not slay the son of the Ancient One.
Yes, Bool, yes. It has been written by the hand of destiny.
Lana, think. Think before you slay me.
It's beyond the realm of thought, Bool. No, I destroy you, Lana.
Did it.
That is the end. All is finished now. No, you must go.
Can you come with us, Lana?
No. For soon I perish also. You must hurry now. Leave Eban quickly. Go while yet you have time. Hasten before it is too late.
Judy, darling, we're underway. Full speed ahead.
No trouble starting the motors, dear?
None at all. Your father and Ned are down with the crew. The men don't even suspect what has happened to us.
Well, just as well. They'd never believe it.
Well, take a last look, Judy. You'll soon be out of sight of the land.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad it's all over, Phil. But poor Lana. She gave her life to save ours, Phil.
Yes, darling. She did.
What's that?
Look. Flames from the mainland, like a volcano.
Phil, the land's sinking.
It's Lana. Judy. She's released the forces. She's destroyed ancient Eban once again.
The Thing from the Sea,
An original tale of dark fantasy by Scott Bishop. Eleanor Naylor Corin was Judith Johnston. Ben Morris played Philip Hayward. Fred Wayne was heard as Johnston. Eugene Francis played Ned. Georgiana Cook was Lana. And Daryl McAllister was Boole, the Thing from the Sea. Next Friday night at the same time, the National Broadcasting Company will bring you another weird adventure thriller, The Demon Tree, another tale of dark fantasy, created by Scott Bishop and based upon the ancient legend of the Strangling Oak of Nanor Woods in England.
Dark fantasy. Eating from the darkness.
What's that? Oh, the telephone. Tell him that the first chance a man gets sleep in this country, and the dad blame telephone has to wake me up. I should let it ring till doomsday. Yes? Yes, this is Sand Canyon Airport. Oh, this is Don Thurman speaking. Yeah, there's a plane here. Where? Mantella. I don't care much for that trip across the desert, but if you need the plane, they're willing to pay me for flying it to you. It'll make it 600, and it's a deal. All right, I'll make the arrangements. Yeah, you can expect me in about 7 hours if everything goes all right. Yeah, fine. And have that 600 waiting for me. I'll need it at Mantella. Let's see. North, northeast, 13 degrees. The Mantella lies in that direction. I'm going to buck a headwind most of the way, I'm afraid. And those mountains worry me. They're dangerous. Let's see now. Over this way, it's Santia. No, not that way for me. If I ever ended up in Santia, I wouldn't want to bet anything on my chances of getting to that place and coming out to tell about it. I can't stay up here much longer. Sandstorm over the desert's getting worse every minute. I can't see a thing down there. Thick as pea soup. Oh, confound it. There goes the motor, choked up with sand. Well, here it goes. I can't see where I'm heading, but maybe I can bring her in on her belly. War drums. Trouble. They've been pounding in my ears for hours. Oh, my eyes blinded by that awful sandstorm. I can't see. Don't know whether it's day or night. All I know is that someone found me out there on that desert and brought me here. Is that someone? Someone there.
I have come to take you to the king. You will be placed in the den of the leopards.
Leopards?
It is our custom here to feed uninvited guests as a sacrifice to the leopards of the pit.
What is this?
It nears the time of the full moon. When the moon is full, its rays affect our leopards, maddens them, makes them vicious beyond control. Only the flesh of man will quiet them. And only the king can perform the ceremony of sacrifice.
King? What king?
King of Santia.
Am I at Santia?
You are. Yes, you have come where white man is forbidden.
But my plane was forced down on the desert. I was purposely avoiding Santia. I was trying to reach Mantella.
You were 500 miles from Mantella.
But I can't be. I was only in that storm for a few hours.
The storm has been raging for 3 days.
3 days? Why, I've been only 2 hours on the desert. The storm came up only a few hours ago.
The entire desert has been covered with a storm for 3 days.
But I don't understand.
You were discovered only because Iana has once again displayed her temper towards her father.
Iana?
Daughter of King Genasi. It has been arranged that Iana is to wed within the changing of the moon. And Iana has rebelled. She attempted to flee Santia through the desert storm. She was followed. She was discovered there with you.
Then she found me?
Yes. But two of you will return hitherto to the village. Now you will come with me.
My eyes. I can't see a thing.
It is the justice of Santia.
What do you mean?
Come.
You will have to guide me.
Then take my arm. Now.
All right. Let's go.
This way.
How far?
Right. Tanamahasi!
What's the matter?
Tanamahasi! Tanamahasi!
What in thunder are you talking about?
They're in the sand. Tanamahasi. Big foot.
I told you I can't see.
Big foot, Tanamahasi. Big leopard foot. Followed by man.
Leopard foot?
Yes, they're in the sand. Leopard tracks. Followed by man tracks. Come, hurry.
Wait a minute.
We must hurry. Evil spirits set loose again by full moon. Tanamahasi. Big leopard. Come, we hurry. I have brought you the prisoner, wise one.
Prisoner? Look here, what is this?
You have come, Mr. Thurman, but you are not welcome.
I tried to tell your flunky here that I didn't come to Santia purposely. I was headed for Mantella.
You are not a very wise man, Mr. Thurman, to make such an unwise statement. Mantelli is 500,000 miles from here.
No, I got off my course. I ran into a sandstorm. My plane was forced down.
It's a likely case.
But it's true. I was blinded by the sand. I'm still blind. If you have a doctor,
I... You say you are blind?
I am. I need medical attention right away.
Blind. It is the justice of Santia.
What are you talking about?
It is a law that should a white man look upon the countenance of Princess Iana, his eyes shall be blinded.
I don't know what you're talking about, Tanasi. I've never seen your princess.
We found you with her on the desert.
Well, I was unconscious when you found me.
But she was with you.
Then she found the same spot where I took refuge.
We are not fools here, Mr. Thurman.
Fools? I don't understand.
It is so ridiculously evident.
What's so evident?
I have made complete arrangements for my daughter to wed. She has refused to marry as I wish her to. And last night, she fled from Santia. And when we found her, she was with you.
But what you think isn't true.
You had the rendezvous there with her.
No.
How many times you have met, I do not know. But each meeting has been in complete defiance of the laws of Santia. That no white man may look upon the countenance of the prince.
I deny it. I don't know your princess.
The evidence speaks for itself. You are blind.
From the sandstorm.
No. Because the gods are vengeful.
I tell you, the sand blinded me. It's only temporary.
It was written ages ago that whatever white man looks upon the countenance of Santia Princess will be doomed forever to eternal blindness.
It's not eternal. It's sand blindness. It happens to lots of men who get caught in sandstorms. All I need is a doctor.
No doctor can cure the blindness sent down by the gods.
Give me a chance. I may be blind permanently if you don't let a doctor look at my eyes.
King Genasi, your daughter approaches.
Come in, my daughter.
My father. My father, have you heard?
Heard what, my child?
Tanimahasi.
Tanimahasi?
Yes. He was in the camp again last night. Leopard footprints are near your house, followed by man feet.
Tanimahasi.
It's the evil spirit again in the full of the moon.
I saw them too. Many tracks. Big.
We must tell the wise ones. They will work a charm to protect us.
First, we must dispose of the prisoner.
Look here. Silence! My daughter, come here.
Yes, father?
He's a white man. Look you at his face and tell me, where have you seen him before? Well, my child?
I do not know him. I have never seen him before.
But my king, I saw them together.
Silence, Ivan! You are most wise, my daughter. You are most wise to deny your foreign lover.
But I'm not her lover. I've never seen her. I can't even see her now.
The American is blind, Diana.
Blind?
Because he has broken the law. Because he is looked upon the face of a princess of Santilla. The gods have blinded him.
It's not true. I've never seen her face. Ask her. She'll tell you it's not true.
Take him back to the prison hut. Let him wait there until the body of wise ones sit in judgment of his crime. Silence, Naomi. Silence, my two pretty ones. Tonight is the night of the moon. The night is the night we hunt.
Those drums still pounding. My eyes burning in my head. If I could only find a little cool water. I wonder where I am. The king told Ivan to take me to the prison hut, but instead he brought me here. Here? Where? Somewhere out in the open. Bushes, shrubbery all around it. Wait a minute. What's that? A light. Up there through the trees. A light. Why, it's a star. I can see. I can see again. One lonely, single little star in a sky of heavy clouds. And there, coming over the ridge, the full moon. What's that? Someone, something there in those bushes. Is someone there?
Be quiet, Americano.
Who is it?
Iana.
Princess Iana?
Do not speak so loudly.
Why are you here?
I came to see you. I went first to the prison, but it was empty. Then I knew there had been trickery. Ivan did not do what my father ordered.
No. He brought me here instead. Where are we?
On the edge of Decana.
Decana? The precipice?
Yes. It is hundreds of feet over the side of Decana. Listen. This rock, I will show you. Ivan knew you were blind. He left you here alone, knowing you would eventually wander over the edge and be crushed on the jagged rocks down there. He could not wait for the sacrifice.
Sacrifice?
Yes. With each fullness of the moon, the leopards in the pit of Santilla become madly enraged. The wise men say the moon rays affect them. They must be appeased by the flesh of a human.
And the moon will soon be full again.
Yes, Donaldo.
A pleasant thought.
But Ivan could not wait. He fears all Americanos. So he brought you here to be a victim of Decana.
Oh, a nice fellow.
I despise him.
And my father says I must marry him.
You mean... You don't mean you're supposed to marry him.
Do you blame me for running away?
I certainly don't.
Even death on the desert would have been better than him.
Princess, why have you come here?
Because I would not have you die, as Ivan wishes.
How did you find me?
I have ways.
Tell me, Ivan said the storm on the desert had been blowing for 3 days. Is that true?
Yes, it is true.
But I was only an hour and a half journey from San Felidor. I ran into the storm suddenly.
I cannot say about that. Donato, your eyes. You look upon me as though you see me.
I do see you. My sight has come back.
Oh, no.
You're not glad I can see again?
No. I mean, oh, yes, I... But, Donato, to look upon my face...
Oh, nonsense. That's all a lot of tripe. Oh, what's that?
Tanimahasi.
What?
Tanimahasi, evil leopard spirit.
Oh, look here. What is this evil spirit business?
Tanimahasi, leopard. Wherever he goes, tracks always followed by those of men. They kill at the full of moon.
A leopard man?
Oh, do not say so.
Why?
Because he is a leopard man.
Have you ever seen him?
Oh, listen.
Come on. That's right over here someplace.
Oh, Donato, have care. It is an evil spirit, a spirit that kills.
Do you have any kind of a weapon?
Only a small dagger.
Oh, give it to me.
Oh, no weapon will harm Tanimahasi.
Oh, we'll see. Oh, wait. The clouds are... Oh, there he is. Over there.
It's Ivan. Oh, look at him.
He's been...
He will die. We must take him back to the village.
He's unconscious. Jungle.
No! Do not touch him.
Who's that?
Father.
Diana. Go at once to your hut. And remain there. I fear the gods even now hide their faces from you.
Oh, but Father, Ivan is badly hurt.
Go, at once. Now, Mr. Darman.
This man needs attention.
Put him down.
What?
I said put him down.
But he's badly wounded.
By the claws of an animal.
Yes. We heard the animal screaming. The princess tells me it's a leopard man.
It is true. Tanimahasi, the evil spirit. A spirit which takes possession of a man and changes him into a leopard.
Yes, but what man? Who?
We have not known up to now.
Up to now?
Look at your hands.
Blood.
Deep beneath your nails.
But I...
It is an evil disease, Mr. Thurman. To bring it here among us is still more evil.
But I say, look here. Do you think I did this?
I repeat. Look at your hands.
Oh, no, you're wrong. It's Ivan's blood.
So it is.
But I got it on my hands when I tried to help him.
Put him down. Mr. Thurman, I do not try to escape. Ivan will be returned to the camp. Our medicine men will heal him. You will go with me now.
Where?
Your spirit must be destroyed. You have had the wisdom of our elders, Mr. Thurman. You are guilty of a most foul sin against us. You must pay the penalty. And you, unfortunate daughter, are equally guilty with him. I cannot plead for you. The law is so written. You have seen too, Iana. Tomorrow night, the two of you shall perish.
This stone stairway leads to the leopard pit. The two of you go first.
Come, Donato. Be brave.
I'm thinking of you, Iana. Thank you.
pit is 100 feet into the earth. We are halfway down now. Look up above us.
Good Lord. This pit is immense, huge and round.
Yes.
And look up there. All the tribespeople of Santia perched around its ridge, peering down.
Yeah, to watch this sacrifice. Yeah.
But how can they see down here? It's pitch dark. We can hardly make our way in the blackness.
Soon, the full moon will be directly above the pit. It is only when the moon is full that its rays reach here into the depths. And its beams madden the leopards.
Iana, I see the beast now. Two of them. There's a man down there with them, petting them. Look, your father.
No.
He's a white man.
I too am white. But I am not his daughter. He has been king of Santia for many years. He stole me when I was an infant at Mantella because he wanted a white princess.
Iana, the moon.
It's coming over the edge of the pit. The people up there can see us now. You see, the moon rays affect the beasts quickly.
Move on, down to the pit's bottom.
Come, Donaldo.
Iana, there must be some escape for you.
I am not afraid, Donaldo.
No, isn't there any way to escape?
Only one. An impossible one.
What does he mean?
It has always been the belief that if the prisoners are not truly guilty, the leopards will not harm them.
There. The full moon is directly over the pit.
I remain here. You too, through this iron gate.
Donaldo. There is only one more gate now. The one that separates us from the animals. Come.
Look how that man controls those animals.
It is the power of the full moon.
Then there is another way out. If we can keep away from the animals until the moon has crossed the pit.
Oh, no, that would be ours. The leopards will be released upon us any moment. This is as far as we go.
Alania! Minikana! Niakana! Alania! Minikana! Niakana!
Iana, if I could only save you.
There is no way. Courage, Donaldo.
No, I'm not afraid for myself.
Now, you die. Now I offer you to the gods. Open the gate.
No. Wait, Iana. Look, the moon.
Donaldo. It is gone.
Dark. Has the moon crossed the pit?
Oh, no, no, it did not come.
It's behind the cloud.
Oh, Donaldo. A leopard. My father. They'll kill him.
No. No, Sita. No. No. Down. Down. You back. Get away from me. No. 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 No.
Heard The Thing from the Darkness. Tonight's original tale of dark fantasy by Scott Bishop, originating in the studios of WKY. Ben Morris was heard tonight as Donald Thurman. Eleanor Naylor Corrin was Princess Iana. Fred Wayne played King Tanasi. And Muir Hype was Yvonne. Created for you by Scott Bishop. Dark Fantasy comes to you from Oklahoma City.
Good evening, dear listeners. I am Barnabas Collins. I hope you will forgive the intrusion, and I hope that you have been enjoying Broken Sea Audio Productions' OTR Swagcast. Please allow me to introduce the next haunting episode of Dark Shadows.
There are those at Collinwood who wear many masks. Who they are and what they are doing may depend upon the dark of night or upon the light of day. For there is no time when evil sleeps. Danger is everywhere, at all times. Even the dead can still be dangerous.
Dr. Woodard, what are you doing here?
I think the more pertinent question, Dr. Hoffman, is what are you doing here?
Continuing my research. How did you know I was here?
Well, I was up looking for you at Collinwood. Mrs. Stoddard told me you were down here at the old house. What I would like to know is what kind of research are you conducting in a musty old place like this?
The work I'm doing is important. That's all I can tell you.
Well, to justify your being here while your patient's 100 miles away, it better be pretty important.
I assure you it is.
This whole situation is getting more and more unethical. Unless you can give me an answer that satisfies me, Julia, I have no alternative. I've got to take Maggie away from you, away from Wincliffe.
Can't do that. That would be the most dangerous thing in the world to do.
Dangerous to whom?
I can't tell you that.
Well, I'm not leaving here until you do tell me.
I think taking Maggie Evans out of Wincliffe would be most dangerous for Maggie herself.
Why?
I certainly don't think she's in any position to go out into the world, do you?
No, I don't. But I don't think she's going to get much better while you're down here involved in, well, distinctly unmedical activities.
What I'm doing here is the only thing that can help that girl.
Julia? You've got to admit that this whole business is extremely unorthodox.
Maggie's is a very unorthodox case. She's got to be handled delicately.
Yes, I know that as well as you do. A girl who's been kidnapped, a girl who's been frightened into a fantasy world, has to be drawn back into the real world slowly, carefully. Now, that takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. But it also takes a doctor who's with her constantly and not 100 miles away from her.
Got to let me handle this my way.
Well, what am I supposed to do with her father and her fiancé when they happen to wonder what you're doing here at Collinwood while she's up in your sanitarium?
We'll worry about that when it happens.
It's already happened. They got after me in the middle of last night, demanding answers to what's going on, and I couldn't give them any answers. Apparently, you can't give them either.
I'm afraid I can't give them any answers yet.
Julia, they have a right to know at least what's being done for the girl.
Oh, Dave, if I were to tell them even a little of what I know, there would be three people in deadly terror, not just Maggie.
What exactly do you suspect?
I believe that Maggie Evans came face to face with the supernatural. And in a way that frightened her beyond anything you or I can understand. I can't exorcise that fear in the usual manner. I can't convince her that what terrified her doesn't exist. Because I know it does exist.
Are you a scientist telling me that the supernatural exists?
I have evidence that I've been working on. If I'm right, medicine is about to break through the ultimate barrier between life and death. You realize that the doctors who help make that breakthrough will go down in history.
Between life and death?
Dave, when you were in medical school, didn't you dream of making some major contribution?
Yeah.
Well, that could happen now for both of us.
Julie, I've got to know a great deal more than I know now.
Oh, you will. I'll tell you, because I need your skill and knowledge to help see me through.
I'll help you any way that I can.
Well, the first thing you have to do is have Sam Evans and that boy make them stay calm. Assure them that Maggie is being properly taken care of, getting the best possible treatment.
And in the meantime, what are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm going to continue my investigation here.
Are you telling me that there's something at Collinwood that relates to Maggie and what happened to her?
Yes.
Well, what is it?
I can't tell you, Dave. I can't tell you for your own sake. I don't want to put you in any danger.
Danger? Danger? What danger?
The world that Maggie entered is a terrible one. I don't want you or anyone else to have to see a moment of it until I can devise some protection.
Well, Julia, if I didn't know that you were a thoroughly dedicated professional, I'd say that what you just said to me is utter nonsense.
Believe me, it isn't. Oh, all I ask is that you trust me for just a little longer. I know what I'm doing.
You better know what you're doing, Doctor. It appears to me that you've given yourself very little margin for error.
Cry about. Here, I'll help you look for it.
I can't.
Well, yes, I can. Did you lose it in the woods? I mean, around here? What was it that you lost? Come on, Sarah, tell me what it was you lost.
I lost a friend.
What friend?
Her name was Maggie.
You mean Maggie Evans?
She's lost, and I miss her.
Well, Sarah, I'm sorry that you miss Maggie so much. But it's Maggie we're looking for. Well, we'd better not look anymore. Here, why don't you help me look for different kinds of leaves?
Why should we stop looking for Maggie?
Well, if we keep looking, we'll never find her.
Why not?
Because she's dead. What are you laughing about?
She isn't dead at all. She's just lost.
Sarah, of course she's dead. My father told me, and so did my aunt, and Vicky, and everybody else.
Well, everyone's wrong. Because if Maggie were dead, I'd know it. And then I wouldn't have to cry.
Don't cry. It makes me feel bad.
She's gone away somewhere. But I don't know just where. Sometimes I almost know where she is. Then it all fades away. And I begin to cry again.
Look, Sarah. I've got a good idea. You can come to my house, and we can play together there.
I'm not allowed to go to other people's houses. They don't like you there.
Well, my family won't mind. They'll be very glad to have you.
I just think I should. Maybe sometime, but not now. You better go now. It's getting late.
You're coming with me to my house. Because if I leave you here, you'll get sad because Maggie's dead.
She isn't dead. She's just lost.
Everyone else says she's dead.
Well, everyone else is wrong.
How can you be so sure?
You know about leaves and everything. Well, I know who's dead and who isn't.
I'm Bert Devlin.
Oh, Vicky's gone out. She'll be back in a moment. She has a date with you.
Well, you seem to know something about me, and I don't even know your name.
I'm Julia Hoffman.
Well, yes, I do know something about you, too. You're doing some investigations into the Collins family.
I'm doing a history of the Collins family.
Yes, I know. Why?
Why?
Yes. Why the Collins family?
As a matter of fact, I'm going to do histories of other families as well. It just happens that I've started with the Collins family.
I see. What other families were you planning to investigate?
If I gave you a list of names, it would mean nothing to you.
All right, then I'll try again. Why are you investigating all these families? What is it you're looking for?
Mr. Devlin, my research is quite specialized. I'm not sure I could explain it to an outsider.
Oh, but I'm not an outsider. I grew up in Collinsport. In this town, we were fed the past right along with our first spoonful of oatmeal.
We were fed the past as far as it's now known. My plan, my research will prove that the Collins family and other families go back even farther than most people think.
Well, so what? Why is that so important?
Mr. Devlin, if you don't think it's important, then you don't. That's the end of it.
I'm sorry, Miss Hoffman. I didn't mean to be rude, but as I said, I grew up in Collinsport, and I've seen dozens of people poking around old papers and deeds and wills and books, and I never thought anything of it. But you, there's something about you. I mean, you just really aren't the type.
Aren't the type for what?
Oh, to be satisfied to carry some old family back a generation or two. Or to putting a footnote on a genealogical volume. No, you seem to be quite a different kind of person.
Do I?
Yes. After something much bigger than a footnote. And I'd like to know just what it is you're looking for. Just why it is you're here.
Very well, then. I'll make a full confession. I heard that an old sea captain left a trunk of jewels in the basement. And I'm going to get them. Is that what you want to hear?
Not exactly. Try again.
Mrs. Goddard, Carolyn. Oh, Burke, I'm so glad you're here. Hello, Miss Hoffman.
Hello, you look as if you ran all the way home.
No, just from the driveway.
What's the matter?
Nothing's the matter. The most wonderful thing has just happened.
What?
I'm in love.
Well, I don't think that's so wonderful. Who's the lucky guy?
No. It's with a house. I found a most enchanting old house in the world. It's on the end of the North Road by the sea. I must have passed it hundreds of times. Only this is the first time I'd ever really noticed it. Burke, it's like it was just waiting there. Just for me. Haven't you ever had that feeling, Burke, that you're supposed to find something at a particular moment?
Vicky, what's this house like?
I'm sure you two would prefer to be alone.
Oh, no. Wait, Miss Hoffman. I want you to hear about it. I think you'd be very interested. The house is very old. It faces onto the sea. In fact, it's almost part of the sea. I think that whoever built it felt much more at home on the sea than on land.
Probably some old sea captain.
And it's completely isolated. No houses, no people. Just it. And the sea. And it's bleached very pale, as though the sea had washed through it and cleaned it. And there it sits like a dowager queen, waiting for the ocean to bring her beautiful gifts from all over the world.
Boy, this place really got to you.
Yes, it did. Because it's the house I've been dreaming of all my life.
I'd kind of like to take a look at it.
Maybe all you'll see is an empty old house. In fact, maybe that's all I'll see the next time we go back there. It was wonderful. Finding it and standing there. And listening to the sea. And feeling that I really belonged there. And the house knew it. And the sea knew it. And I knew it too, and we were all very happy there together.
Now you wait right here, and I'll go tell Vicky that I brought another friend.
I don't think I should.
Look, Sarah. You'll see. They'll be very happy to have you stay for dinner.
David?
Yes?
Is that you?
Yes. I brought a friend. Can she stay for dinner?
Sure.
Who? Well, she came in with me. Now, where'd she go? Well, I met her in the woods, and she was crying. So I said she could come home and have supper with me. And then she said she was, well, she acted very shy.
Well, of course she could have supper with us, but I don't see her anywhere here.
Well,
listen, maybe she's outside. You said she was shy. Perhaps she was afraid to come in.
Hey, maybe you're right. She's not there either.
Well, it looks to me like she went home. Do you know where she lives?
No. I meant to ask her that, but she was crying too much.
What was she crying about, David?
Maggie Evans.
She was a friend of Maggie?
Well, Sarah kept telling me she is a friend of Maggie.
She must know that Maggie's dead.
Yes, but I kept telling her that, and she said that she wasn't. She said that she'd just gone away someplace.
Oh, the child was probably just talking nonsense. Doesn't he have anyone else to play with?
I like playing with Sarah. Besides, I'm very sorry that she was crying.
Well, we're all sorry that Sarah was crying, but was Sarah really crying?
What do you mean?
Well, sometimes when you're alone and you feel very lonely, you pretend that someone's with you. You make up a friend.
The way you made up Sarah.
I did not make up Sarah.
David, these friends can become very real. And when you're happy, she's happy. And when you're sad, she's sad too. Perhaps she'd even cry.
But Sarah was really crying. I brought her home to try to cheer her up.
Maybe you'll find her tomorrow and she'll play with you then.
Oh, you don't know anything.
It's amazing how real imaginary friends can be to children.
If you don't mind an unsolicited opinion, I wouldn't encourage it in David.
What?
Oh, I don't think David should be encouraged to dwell in fantasy. I think it'd be harmful for him.
Is child psychology another of your specialties, Miss Hoffman?
Of course not. But children shouldn't be encouraged to believe their own fantasies, like this business of a dead girl being alive.
Well, in the first place, I think David will get over that. And then, too, I don't think there's any danger of people believing that there's a Sarah or that Maggie is still living.
Well, I think that we should plan a picnic or something to keep David occupied.
Speaking of picnics, I'm hungry. Let's drive out for something to eat.
Oh, no, I don't want to leave David now.
Oh, don't worry. I'll look after him.
Well, thank you. All right, I'll just get my coat. Bert, come here.
What's the matter?
I found this cap on the floor. It's a little girl's bonnet.
Thank you.
Dark Shadows is a Dan Curtis production.
There is the feeling at Collinwood that time has been suspended, that the past and the present exist as one. For there is one who lived long ago who has returned to live again. He is destined to live and sow the seeds of terror in the dark hours of the night.
Good evening, Willie. Dr. Hoffman was here today.
Oh, what did she want?
Well, she moved a few things into the room we gave her. Said she'd come back tonight to see you.
Oh, what a pity. I won't be here.
Well, where are you going?
If she drops in, you may tell her that I've gone to Collinwood for the evening.
Why are you going there?
Because I have relatives there, remember?
You mean you're going up there to pay a social visit?
Now, why else would I be going there?
Well, that's what I'd like you to tell me.
Willie, you have the most annoying way of getting things confused. I am not beholden to you. You are beholden to me. And don't forget that.
Barnabas, you're going up to Collinwood to see Vicki Winters and nobody else.
Miss Winters is an extraordinary young woman. She hears the voices of the past. She has a sensitivity which few others have.
I wish you'd leave her alone.
Leave her alone? Why should I deny myself the pleasure of her charming company?
Now, you know what I mean. Don't hurt her.
Willie, you do get to be a bore. No wonder I seek other company.
You got plans for a Barnabas. I don't like that.
I have no plans. At least nothing sinister. In the manner of all men attracted to beautiful women, I shall try to make Miss Winters favor me with her attentions.
But you're not an ordinary man.
True. I have certain distinct advantages. And least of all, a less limited point of view.
And no scruples about how to go about to interest her. You'll hurt her if you have to.
Willie, let's not go back on that. I have no plans to harm Miss Winters. Now, shall we let it go at that?
And what if I don't believe you?
You have no choice but to believe me. You know, I really don't understand this mood you're in, Willie. If anything, I should think you'd be filled with joy this evening.
Why?
Because Maggie Evans is alive. I must admit, the thought of it doesn't fill me with much joy.
What happens if Dr. Hoffman can't keep her from telling everything she knows?
All we can do is hope that he has the situation completely under control.
I think it's risky giving her a room downstairs.
Dr. Hoffman has a few foolish notions about science. And we do have an empty room. This is a big, empty house.
This house isn't empty. Not with the secret it holds.
And Hoffman knows that secret.
Well, you don't seem to care that she knows.
I didn't say that.
Well, you're giving her everything she wants.
For the moment. Only for the moment. And I want you to concentrate on Dr. Hoffman.
What do you want me to do?
Watch her. Keep track of her every moment, however innocent it may seem. For the time being, I must cooperate with her. But there'll soon come a time when I shall be prepared to...
To what?
I'm not sure. There's no need for you to worry about it. Just watch her.
All right, I'll keep an eye on her.
You know, How very amusing it is. What? Your concern for Miss Winters and your total indifference to whatever plans I may have for Dr. Hoffman.
I told you, leave Vicky alone.
And I told you that no harm will come to her. So don't concern yourself about her. Don't even think about her. The difference between you and Miss Winters is a gap as wide as the sky. Remember that. Now I must be going. It's strange, isn't it? How people cling to life. How they seem to consider it so much better to grow old, ugly, and humiliated than to...
To what?
And to remain young and beautiful forever, untouched by time. Untouched by anything.
Except loneliness.
Make a good cup of coffee.
What?
You're a million miles away.
No, I'm not.
No. You're just at the end of North Road in that house you fell in love with.
I'm sorry. Would you like some more coffee?
No, thanks. That house has really cast its spell over you, hasn't it?
Yes, I guess it has.
You didn't tell me how big it is.
Oh, it's enormous, Burke. And every room has a different view.
Oh, you went inside.
Well, I had to. So I just looked the other way when I walked past the no trespassing sign and went right in.
Was the door open?
Uh-huh.
Well, in that case, the place is probably a shambles on the inside from hobos and kids going in through the years.
No. As a matter of fact, it's in perfect shape. As though it had been abandoned just yesterday.
You know, in those days, they really built houses to last. And ever since I was a kid, I've been very interested in them. In the style, the width of the beams, the height of the ceilings.
Have you? When I looked out one of the windows that faced the sea, I saw a three-masted schooner in the distance.
What are you talking about? There hasn't been a three-masted schooner in those waters for 100 years.
Well, there it was, getting closer and closer all the time. And it was carrying a cargo of cashmere, silk, spices from the Orient. And the captain was there, and he had his young bride with him from Barbados, getting closer and closer.
Vicky, you don't mean to tell me you stood by a window and looked out on an empty ocean and saw all that?
You don't believe me?
Well, of course I don't.
Well, I guess I'll just have to make up a better story next time.
You mean you were putting me on?
Well, it was the kind of ocean that should have had a three-masted schooner on it. Are you disappointed?
Oh, not at all. I'm delighted. Say, I've got an idea. Why don't we drive out there and take a look at that house?
Oh, yes, let's go tomorrow. We'll make a picnic and take David.
Well, I wasn't talking about tomorrow. And I wasn't thinking about taking David along. I was thinking about right now.
Right now?
Yes.
Well, are you sure?
Well, of course I'm sure. The way you talk about that house, it's gotten hold of your affections. And that makes it my rival. And I'm the kind of guy who likes to size up his rivals right away and face to face.
Who Well, all right. But I do want to change into something warmer.
Well, why? The night air is warm enough, isn't it?
Yes. But when I was there, it was very cold. I suppose that's because it's been abandoned so long.
All right. You go up and change into anything that makes you happy, and we'll leave.
Bert, I don't think we should go now. I just don't want to leave David alone. He was so upset about his friend.
Oh, we're in luck. Here comes a babysitter.
How nice to see you.
I was hoping you would think so, Miss Winters. Have you just arrived, Ethel?
As a matter of fact, I was just leaving. We were just leaving.
But we didn't say anything definitely.
Vicky has found a house up on the old North Road, and she wants me to look at it.
Oh, it's right on the ocean. It's surrounded by birch trees. It's bleached so pale that you can hardly see it unless you know exactly where to look.
That sounds very charming.
Oh, it is. It's the most charming house I've ever seen.
And the emptiest. Well, now, how did you know it was empty? Well, I just surmised it. Old houses with people living in them lose a great deal of their charm. But people do so many things that are wrong.
You mean like putting in electricity and heat?
Things like that. Yes. But not that I blame them. I suppose most people enjoy the creature comforts. I don't expect them to live like I do, by candlelight.
It's true, though. Your house has a very special quality to it because you've remained true to the period and not put in things like electricity.
Well, if you'll pardon me for being revolutionary about it, I happen to like electricity and heat.
Especially heat. Oh, it was so cold in that house you wouldn't believe.
Oh, I can believe that.
Pity we can't have both. Candlelight and the comfort.
You know, I would really very much like to see this house of yours.
Oh, it'll never be mine.
Oh, be that as it may, I would like to see it very much.
Well, then you're more than welcome to join. Isn't he, Burke?
Oh, yeah. Sure, there's nothing I'd like better than the three of us to look at the house by moonlight.
Well, if it's any trouble to you, you can always stay here.
I didn't say anything about trouble.
And there's something else that we were talking about. Taking David along and making a picnic.
A picnic? Why? When?
Tomorrow, if that would suit you. As a matter of fact, the more I think about it, the more I like the idea. It would be broad daylight then, and we could get a good look at the house.
And the authorities could get a good look at us, too.
What do you mean?
Well, no trespassing sign means just that. No trespassing. And it would seem to me to be a little reckless to go out there in broad daylight, uninvited.
Well, now, that's odd. Vicky mentioned there was a no trespassing sign there, but how did you know about it?
Well, almost all empty houses have such signs. But I'm sure that tonight, when most ordinary people are asleep in their beds, we could go out there and look to our heart's content.
I think he's right, Burke.
Well, if you recall, I was the one that had the original idea to drive out there tonight.
Yes, you were. Well, I'll go up and get changed and look in on David.
Well, now you hurry. Miss Winters.
Yes?
Is anything the matter with Cousin David?
Oh, no. Nothing serious. He was just upset because he invited a friend for dinner and she decided to go home instead.
Is that all?
Yes, it's just that he acted so strangely about it. I suppose when you grow up, you get out of touch with the way the children think. Seems like such a long time ago that we were David's age, doesn't it?
Yes. It does seem like a long, long time ago.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian Serafic Panopoli and Stevie Farnaby.